this session, which is connecting the brain to social sciences and some research in neuroscience and experimental psychology. And I think we should have a mix of slides and no slides this time around. But our first presenter is Charles Spence from Oxford University. So I'll just invite Charles up and jump right into it.
And he told me before we left London that he had great new results. So I can't wait.
Okay. So, no slide. It's a bit unusual, but we were told not to, so I'll do my best.
Yeah, there was a communication gap.
And I have no idea how long 5 or 6 or 7 minutes is exactly, so just tell me when to stop if I in danger of going over. I guess I'm an experimental psychologist, some would say cognitive neuroscientist, but not as much as some of the people we have here, working on the senses, hearing, vision, touch, taste, smell, pain, pheromones, and so on, depending on how many you think we have. So I work on the senses, sensory interaction, how the brain works, and trying to use the insights that are coming out of brain science in applications. And today it's application of food and packaging and environments in which we eat, but it could as well be car interiors, warning signals, paints, sex toys, we work on everything. And just how knowing about the brain can help in design. That's the challenge. And everyone in my group works kind of partly basic research and neuroscience, psychology, sensory integration, and partly in an applied domain, how to use those insights. Funding for my group comes from industry, and we've worked with flavor fragrance houses, so Takasago, Firmenich, Quest, 3 out of the 5 big flavor fragrance perfume houses. We've done a lot of work with some home and personal care goods, everything Unilever, Procter & Gamble, Britvic, Mars, Nestle, and so on and so forth. They're thinking about product design, packaging design. Through more recently to kind of atmospherics and store environments and restaurant environments. So we've done work on what should McDonald's smell like for McDonald's, what should Starbucks sound like for you can guess who, through to kind of high-end restaurants where you're playing with the senses and design in a food context. So that's places like the Fat Duck, world's number 2 restaurant. We look at how to engage the senses of the diner to give them new experiences they've never had before in the case of food. And that's partly for entertainment value, but I guess it could be extended to healthy eating type situations. And the sort of things that we do, we're not creative, so we can't create anything. All we offer these companies is kind of, on the one hand, claim support. How would you prove some sensory claim about a product, environment, thing? And how do you do it most efficiently, or a marketing claim, using contemporary neuroscience, psychophysics, psychology techniques. So, for example, we're currently working for a Japanese fragrance house on their new perfume that supposedly makes women look younger. That's the claim they want to make, and how can you provide evidence for that quickly and cheaply? Others, you might say, look at the fragrance that makes something, my clothes feel softer. Again, how would you do that? How would you prove it? We also do a lot of work on sort of evaluating alternatives. So a company might come to us with 10 new package designs and say, well, we've got this new product food. Which of these packages works best and why? And how can you test? Can you design for us a new metric or experiment that we can take into our internally or around the world to evaluate these packages, these new sensory experiences that we have in different markets? And increasingly, I see a lot of our work going more down the marketing route and sort of PR. That in England, at least, I guess the media are very sceptical about everything, really. So when food companies want to introduce new stuff, it's hard for them to get stuff into the media, but a very powerful, I think, productive, effective means for launching stories is increasingly combining neuroscience. So you have the neuroscientist, the psychologist, together with a food company and something, and you've got a story, and that's becoming more and more prominent and popular. So some of these sort of examples that I think about in today's context, we work on product design, what things should taste like, what sort of illusions can you create in the mouth, say, in order to reduce sugar, to reduce salt, Can you use different colouring in food? Are there colours that connote sweetness? And if so, can you keep the product kind of constant in the mind of the consumer by reducing one sense but boosting another one? So if we can find the colour of sweetness, the literature would claim that we can drop sugar by 12% and people cannot tell the difference from a food that doesn't look sweet but is sweet to a food that looks sweet but isn't so sweet. So how much truth in that is there in that? That's a laboratory study, and how do you go from there to the real world environment? Will people learn that their brains are being tricked sooner or later about the energy content of foods? We also work a lot on salt. Are there colours that go that you can use to connote salt perception? Much harder to do. We work a lot on sound. We've done work showing at crispness, crunchiness perception, how by changing what a consumer hears when they bite into a crisp, say, you can increase crispness by 15%. And again, then you can think about changing your cooking styles in companies in order for healthier preparation, but keep the consumer percept constant. And now we've introduced psychophysical tests that are used by Nestle, Procter & Gamble, Unilever for their dry food products, just to see which sound sounds best. And trying to map out the sound space for new food products without having to cook them in advance to know whether people will like them. We can use technology to create different product sounds. When you bite into something, you hear the same thing amplified, modulated, or something completely different. What's your experience? When we find the best experience, can we then go to the chefs or the producers and say, okay, can you cook that thing? Sometimes they can't make the thing that people like the sound of, but they know which direction to head, and you can get kind of more rapid product development as a result. Other example of sound, think about carbonation in a drink. Carbonic acid is bad for the teeth. What can we do to reduce carbonic acid while keeping the percept constant, more or less? Well, it turns out what we hear when we have a fizzy drink in the glass or in the can is a large part of our perception of fizzy carbonation, sparkling. And by changing the sound you hear, again, you can change perceived carbonation. So then you can think about product packaging design, what sort of containers or modifications to cans, bottles, other containers would help to influence change, amplify the sound in order to promote carbonation, but make for a healthier choice. We work a lot on individual differences too, be that through the lifespan. If you're developing foods for kids, are they more driven by the colour of the food, by its taste, by its smell? How does sensory dominance in food perception change over the lifespan? From childhood through adulthood, where we do most of our work, through to old age, what happens when we have this growing number of 70-plus consumers who are losing their sense of taste and smell, and for whom we have nothing we can do to bring back those senses? We're going to have to rely on the other senses in order to deliver foods that are exciting and tasty, because they stimulate the eyes, the ears, and perhaps the sense of touch, senses that do remain when we get to that age. Individual differences also we look at in terms of cross-cultural. Not so much work on this yet, but we've been starting to do work in the UK, Taiwan, South America, and North America, looking at the kind of associations people have between colours in food. If I gave you a blue food, what would you think it tasted like? And does that change depending on what's in the market, in the supermarket in your area? And how do you teach people new associations, say, for cool blue raspberry? Why has that worked while clear tab cola didn't? And we also look at sort of at how the combinations and tastes and smells that you have in your particular culture or environment become kind of, in a way, kind of hardwired, and our brains become good at integrating the smells and tastes that we experienced from the womb onwards and that are different from one country to the next, and how that can help to explain why something that tastes good to me tastes bad to somebody else, and how you can capitalize on those insights. And this is of interest to the flavor companies who want to deliver flavors more cheaply or perhaps more healthily. And if they get the right combinations of fragrance and taste, they can deliver super additive multisensory percepts that you couldn't predict on the basis just of the taste and just of the smell. We also look at packaging. Things even, yeah, a lot of stuff on packaging. Noisy packets, why are crisps in noisy packets? What happens if you change the sound of the packaging? Why did, Sunchips, 120 decibels, the noisiest package in the world, introduced, I guess, as a sort of as a biodegradable packaging, but in fact, it's so noisy, you think, they're really...
Is it you?
No, it wouldn't have been quite so loud. It wouldn't have been quite so loud. Shifting from foods, what we can do with the senses, looking at taste to status as well is very important to us. How we all live in different taste worlds. Some of us have far more taste buds on our tongues than others, and that correlates with our sensations of bitterness in foods, of fat and creaminess in dairy products. And yet we don't know if you're a super taster or not, or you. We should know. Or even if we don't know, the food companies that we work with are increasingly interested in putting products into the marketplace, a variety of brands that will target super tasters and non-tasters. Whether you know it or not, you'll just find yourself migrating towards one brand. But the companies will know that's because it'll taste creamier to you and more bitter, something like that.
Our company currently doing market segmentation on that basis?
Yeah. In India particularly, I know, because they have far more super tasters, so it's a bigger problem than it is in some other countries if you have foods that don't taste too bitter. Then looking at environmental design, this is an area we've kind of moved more and more into. We work with companies like ICI who make paints and fragrances, and they're very interested in the multi-sensory environment, what colour works best for a meeting like this to make us productive, what smell would keep us awake all day, and how should the smell relate to the colour, to the soundtrack you might have in the background, and so on. So we're looking at things like the colour of salivation. If you're giving people something to eat, there are claims in the literature that certain colours of the ambient illumination or the wall colour make you salivate more, might make food taste different. How much truth is there in those claims? A lot of interesting work coming out now on colour of, if I change the colour of the room lights, wine will taste sweeter, other wines will taste more bitter to you. So the environment in which we eat impacts our flavour perception to a far greater degree than we ever thought. And I think neuroscience, psychology is helping to kind of fine-tune the designs of the experiments to look at that. We work a lot on sound as well, the sound, both of music, but also soundscapes. So the kind of things we do. We worked on the sound of the sea seafood dish, where if you go to Heston Blumenthal's restaurant in London, the seafood dish comes with an iPod in a seashell with some headphones coming out, and you'll hear the sound of the sea. And we did an experiment to show that the seafood will taste better if you have the right soundtrack. Showing the consumer how important sound is. And we're also working with other people looking at selecting, moving people's food choice. If I have Italian music, you're more likely to pick an Italian food item on the menu. If Italian food's healthier than, I don't know, German food, then you can use music to improve food choice and selection without people ever really knowing what's going on. So there's environmental sound, kind of semantically meaningful music, and that can be used, of course, in supermarket settings as well. And now we're looking very much at kind of mood music. If our mood affects the taste of things, things taste better when we're in a good mood, can we use environmental sound to pull people's mood up or pull it down, and then show it impacts on the taste and flavour of what comes next? If it does, then every restaurant should be playing some happy music at the start of the meal. So that's colour of the environment, kind of the sounds of the environment. We do a bit of smell in environments as well. I mean, some places use fragrance released in different floors in the building to get people to come down to the canteen at the appropriate time. So smell can be used there.
Charles, you're about 12 minutes.
Okay, perfect. And finally, I'll leave you with, we're working a lot more now with kind of interfaces of psychology, design, and marketing. So we're looking at things like the shape of the glass, how important is that? Can you change the taste perception of water, of coffee, of wine by changing the receptacle? The cutlery we use, knives, forks and spoons, should they be heavy, should they be light, does it depend what size they are, what material, all questions. We've got some preliminary evidence there. Food can taste sweeter if you use a certain sort of cutlery versus another. And finally, about the plates in which we serve. Does it matter if we use black or white plates? Yes, it does. That can change impact on taste, sweetness of the strawberry mousse we just discovered. And also the shapes of the plates. Is it better to have round plates, angular plates? If so, why? What sort of expectations can you set up? And what sort of influences can you have on the food experience?